This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hour number two, Jeff Cameron Show, rolling on a Monday. 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV, going to be with you. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate you greatly. Get on in here. Let's chat it up for another hour. On Twitter, it is at Jay Cameron Show. Tom is in studio today. That is a good thing. Let's look at something here. Let me promote something very quickly here. Tonight at 7 o'clock, normally you would get the Monday Smash, and you are. It's just going to be a different variety of this tonight, kind of a town hall, if you will. We'll have an opportunity to do a roundtable, really. ACC lawsuit roundtable, 7 o'clock. I will be hosting that. My man, Russ Voorhees, I see you there, buddy. Appreciate you. Yeah, we'll be talking, and Gene will be there. Michael will be there. We'll have a chance to kind of go through the news of the day get caught up, I guess. And also, folks can ask questions. So I assume, Tom, those questions have been asked or are being asked as we speak?
Those questions are going to be in the chat tonight.
Just in the chat, okay.
So if you're interested in getting a legal opinion, Mike Tomkiewicz, a.k.a. Loyalty, himself, will be in the building from 7 to 8. And if you've got questions, happen by the Smash tonight, 7 p.m., the back half of the show, we will have your questions answered. I think at the beginning, it's going to be setting the stage of where we are, discussing the impact of the Clemson suit on the entirety of the issue with the ACC, and getting legal opinions on that particular development. It should be interesting stuff. It can get as dense as you'd like if you follow these things, but I think the good news is, for Florida State, the reasons in a court of law for them to make a compelling case seem to be stacking up as the months go on.
Yeah, and I hate how slow these things, operate. How slow it takes a while, and it's tough. And it's one of those things where it's you think you're going to get some sort of eureka out of these hearings, and you realize it's going to take longer than that. And that there'll be more of these, and there's not going to be a pinpoint moment where you go, okay, the court says this, we're all set. This last one that they argued up in North Carolina, that we talked a little bit about what came of that, and that the judge was unimpressed with the ACC's effort to lecture everybody on integrity.
I mean, it's great stuff. I hope they continue to fumble the ball like that, because all this is, it's almost like arbitration. Like, in my opinion, it's almost like arbitration where you're making a case, and yes, I understand it's about venue. That's what the ACC is literally arguing. But as the particular hearing goes well or poorly, your number goes up and down in terms of the settlement. Your leverage, as you say, all right, let's keep it out of the courtroom, let's sidebar here, and let's discuss what the number is going to be. Every day that you go into that courtroom, you're changing the number and who has a little bit more leverage. The judge's ruling, of course, which is supposed to come down, he promised it before April 9th.
Before April 9th.
So he believes he'll have a ruling on that. That can really change the number. But that's all these things are doing. They're not going to go the distance. There's no way either side wants to go the distance. It's about getting to a place where somebody's forced to come to the negotiating table for the settlement figure. I think that's the way it's going, at least.
I would think that is exactly. We kind of first guessed that, didn't we?
What's the number is the thing we said since Oklahoma, Texas. What's the number?
Yeah, I've been yelling it for some time now. What is the number? Also, ever since comments that we saw being made by UNC's Board of Trustees chair, when we read what he had to say, I kind of thought, well, this is being expedited. In fact, for those that don't know, this was the quote. "I think that what Clemson is doing is 100% proof positive that a significant portion of the membership of the conference is unhappy. I don't see how it is in anyone's interest for the ACC leadership to try and browbeat its member schools from gaining access to information and being transparent. That's kind of the case Clemson is making. I think this shows that what is supposed to be a member-based organization is not being led in a way that represents the best interests of all of the members, but instead really representing the bottom tier of the membership at the expense of the top tier, which is why Clemson and Florida State are doing what they're doing. I think that is obvious," was the rest of that quote. That is pretty damn direct.
Yeah, and he goes on to add about his own university and how, you know, perhaps an existence separate the Atlantic Coast Conference is something that might be in their best interest.
"I think we all recognize that a change is hard, but sometimes change is what is needed. We all have to fight the comfort of complacency. I think that now is the time to be very open in pursuing all options, including those beyond the Atlantic Coast Conference." Now, okay, there it is. And that had to have felt a bit like the death knell. That had to feel like et tu, Brute. I mean, North Carolina's chair is saying these things in the heart of ACC land. And you know in that moment, Jim Phillips, I mean, if there was any hope, any like threat of hope, I mean, it was vanquished
there. Well, the problem is that they added three more votes. You know, I think right now we're close to having the votes by the old number in terms of people just saying the hell with this thing. And I just hope this conference shuts down before Miami wins a football championship, and it likely will, because even if Miami stayed in this conference and they were there another 10 years, they probably wouldn't win one anyway. But it'd be pretty cool. It'd be pretty cool if this conference just becomes something else. They rename it. They do whatever. And that program never won a conference championship in football.
No, never did. Only played for it once and got blown out. So, you know. That is pretty funny to think about for a moment, though. I think I don't think I alarmed her, but she kind of chuckled and just looked at me knowing she couldn't say anything. I was talking with Andrea Adelson from ESPN at one of the practices, and you know me. And some point I said, "Boy, Miami picked the wrong time to..." And I can't say, in addition to what I said about them sucking generally.
You did?
For 20 years.
Sir.
Well, I said, I just said offhand, "Boy, Miami picked a bad time to suck for 20 plus years." And she goes, "Yes." And then I realized I wasn't talking to you. Like, I didn't.
Come on, man.
It was great. It was great. She laughed. It was funny. I mean, we know each other.
Okay.
But she agreed. She was like, "Yes, yes."
Yeah, they did.
Not good. It's a toughie.
It's a process that's still emotion. I've had good players from time to time, but it just never seems to be enough. Never seems to be enough.
No, not enough at all. It's a toughie. Yes, last hour I brought up the bullpen, which was tragic, but what I did not bring up has been brought up in the chat at the start of this hour, and that is true. All other member institutions that play baseball in the ACC need to file suit against Clemson's baseball operations. That is criminal.
Oh, the Hill?
That and the... after every pitch... What are we doing other than being dumb and really, really, really annoying at Clemson? What? Stop it. Stop it. It's a fine baseball team, fine baseball program, well coached, well played.
They're going to be a problem.
After every pitch, I texted Lulu in the middle of a broadcast. I said, turn your mic off. Turn the crowd mic off. I can't do this. It is ruining the game. Every pitch. They do it after every pitch. Who in their right mind would sit and listen to that over and over again? How does nobody in that press box go, Steve, Jesus, what are we doing?
Well, Steve calls into Feinbaum.
My God. Over and over and over. And it doesn't help that we keep walking people. So then they're like, oh, on blast. It is insane. And the count goes to 1-0. And that one's fouled back. 1-1. It's unreal. There's no, how can they, if you're a fan, a diehard fan of Clemson, and you go to baseball games, you hate yourself. You have emotional stress and issues.
Or no hearing.
Whew. I'm never going to unhear that. Non-stop. And why that song? Probably for this express reason right here, this one. People like me flipping out. It was, I woke up on Sunday hearing it. Then Sunday happened. I heard more of it. And now I'm hearing it today. I heard it on the drive over in my head. I actually caught myself at a red light getting ready to get on I-10 to get here to the studio. I was doing it at the red light. Criminal.
I could sing the Empire theme for you. 800-588-2300. Empire. Does that help? Get something else stuck in your head?
No, they got to stop it. They got it. They just have to stop it. I also don't get, when you lose three games, you want to be careful in regards to the barbs. I get it. Clemson deserves credit. But why are their players do the same stupid stuff too? They've got like choreographed dances between pitches and between batters in their dugout, like they're children.
That is happening across sports now. You see it especially with the TikTok generation, and this is our own program too.
It used to just be softball.
No. Well, I mean, during the games, sure. I'm just saying in general, the kids are down with the choreographed dancing these days. Like even football players, it's a different era. They do like a choreographed three-man dance. There's one that Duke football did recently that
you mean after a big play or something?
No, I'm saying in their spare time. So it's a part of teenage and college culture now.
Yeah, I guess.
Across all sports? Doesn't matter.
But they kept showing the Clemson dugout in between batters, and there'd be like three guys going like this, and then two would be behind them going like this, and then they're like looking back over in the stands, and then I'm like, Jesus, this is ridiculous. Is everybody there on crack? It was a rave. They've got to stop. Thank God that series is over.
It's actually kind of, yeah, I enjoyed that. I think we need to grab that.
It's awful.
So if we beat them in the ACC tournament, let's say.
Oh, feels like we're destined to,
by the
way. We're
going to screen grab whatever the hell it is you just did in the last minute. And then we're going to put that out on social.
I'm telling you.
With a flashing thing that says, Knowles win.
I ended up muting my television, and I had to run errands at one point, and I put on the broadcast. I was listening to Eric, and I had to turn it on. I told him. I texted him. I'm like, I can't listen to you anymore, bud. Turn the crowd mic off because of the constant. I said, you must be going insane. Watching our bullpen blow massive leads, and you have to try to be calm about it, and then in between, like we're visiting the mound every 5 seconds, we're changing pitchers, we're walking people like it's our job, and over and over, and you're just like, and it looks like they're going to make a change. Posey comes to the mound, they'll go to Oxford here. We'll be back. Doug Kingsmore Stadium in a moment. It's now tied, 8-8. You're like, you're listening to Florida State Baseball on Learfield Sports. He just kept character. Meanwhile, all the absurdities were going on around him. But I kind of thought about it like, okay, well, I only have to hear this for three games while we blow these leads. Their fans go to the games. Like, there's no way. You could never convince me. Jeff, you want to go watch Clemson baseball? No way in hell ever.
What about an usher? The poor usher. Just trying to make a living, man. They're brainwashing me.
It's just got to, it's the worst thing ever. Walking through the stands, and it, like a bunch of a fat hillbillies sitting there having to hear that. Like, look, you could look, when they scan the stands, you're like, look at this guy in overalls. You think he's digging this? He had legitimate overalls on. His belly hanging out, leaning back. I'm like, he must think I am in hell. What has happened?
What has happened to baseball?
Right. What has happened to baseball is right.
Time was, you come to a Clemson baseball game, I might hear a fiddle.
I don't hear this stuff.
You don't even have, like, where, is it a commentary on society?
Like I'm in
society?
The pinball room.
Like, it is, you feel like you're in the pinball machine.
That's right.
About to die.
Yes. You know.
Over and over, it's always the same song. They have no other song, just that one. It's a bit outside, 1-0. Worst thing that I've experienced in a broadcast in a long time. And then add to it, our bullpen giving up 400 runs in 8 innings.
Late 90s techno wasn't your thing.
Even if it were. Yeah, I felt like we needed strobes. At some point, it was going to be strobes.
Leather pants.
Oh, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Pacifiers, drugs everywhere. Let the Clemson fans get after it.
I remember my youngest sister went to USF in the late 90s, early 2000s, and yeah, that was it. The techno stuff, Darude Sandstorm, the original, you know, one of the OGs, and leather pants, Cosmic Bowling.
Nope, missed it.
Cosmic Bowling. Everybody's in leather pants. Interesting time.
No, thank you. It's the Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Hey, Seminoles, we all know how important it is to score in the red zone, but are you prepared for success in the retirement zone? The 5 years leading up to your retirement date and immediate 5 years after are a critical time of thoughtful planning for you and your family. And our friend and fellow Noel, I might add, Adam Tolliver, and his team at Artisan Financial Strategies are prepared to coach you to victory. Some of us are at midfield, that'd be me, and want to plan ahead. Others are ready to punch it in. You're already on the goal line. Whether making sure you know how much you can spend without running out of money, protecting yourself and your family from a long-term care event, or carefully planning your legacy, the Artisan team brings a combined 30-plus years of advisory experience and world-class resources to help you navigate the way. For more information, just head over to NoelRetirement.com. That's just one word, NoelRetirement.com. Jeff Cameron Show. You just heard the Orange Theory liner there. Want to remind you they've added to the repertoire of things you could do to stay in great shape as the summer months and these beautiful spring days are upon us. They now have Tread 50. So if you just want to go and run and get a good sweat, just treadmill 50 minutes, it's awesome. Just go in there and you don't have to worry about any of the other stuff. There's just Tread 50. You don't have to go lift or anything else. You just run. And if you just want to lift and you don't feel like running, well, they got you covered there, too. There's a Strength 50, and they do lower and upper body. So they really have kind of diversified the different ways in which you can work out at Orange Theory. So I know a lot of people like a lot of different things about that. They want to mix it up during the week. So they give you that opportunity now when you book classes. So Orange Theory Fitness, there's one in Midtown. There's one Northside. Deion Sanders says he may, and Irish Fell going to join us in a second. Before he does, I want to point out that Deion says he's going to try to sway his son's fate in the draft, kind of like Eli Manning situation, right, where the Mannings didn't want him to go. So he's saying that. Now, imagine this on the heels of Deion Sanders saying this after being criticized for having a horrible class ranking in recruiting and showing no signs of doing any better when it comes to high school recruiting. Quote, "I really, truly, and all my heart believe that parents don't want me at their house. They want to come see my house. They want to see how I live. They want to see how I get down. They want to see what I got going on, what God's done in my life." This isn't going to work out for him.
Correct. That's why I was saying that Colorado isn't going to do any TV distribution last week, because Deion doesn't want to be in anybody else's home. You got to come see him in Boulder.
I want them to see how beautiful it is here and how much I love this city. I want them to see that, because that's where their kid's going to school. Kids coming here. Going there is just a showcase. You know, I'm worried about blowing money, sir. You're worried about the university's money if you go on a visit to a kid. He goes, I can't do the other things that other coaches do. You want to know why I can't do those things? I'm Coach Prime. Yeah, man. Not going to work out. We first guessed it. You think we're going to get the Caleb Cunningham kid? Can get him out of Mississippi?
I think there's some heavy lifting to be done at the skill positions. But I think they're doing, it looks like they've got some options at linebacker, front six. That's the new term. I'm going to call it the front six from now on. I think they're doing okay there, and the O-line looks like it's coming together. That seems to be what Michael was talking about last week.
Yeah, I'm really big on the offensive line stuff. That always, you know, because that plays. And by the way, the stud linebacker, who I saw on Saturday, talked about an official visit to Florida State. So there you go. That's a miracle. A stud linebacker is interested in coming here? How about that?
It does seem like early on in this 2025 cycle, as there was a kid who flipped, I think, from Georgia to USC this weekend, a defensive tackle.
That is correct.
That's an all-everything defensive tackle. That infrastructure is going to be very important for a lot of reasons. USC's desperate for defensive help, so infrastructure is going to be important. Auburn is always going to be desperate. So infrastructure is very important. Alabama is now going to be desperate for the first time, I believe, on the market because there isn't a Saban discount. So infrastructure is going to be very important.
We've got good infrastructure. That's a necessary
component.
There's a
commitment made, and infrastructure is going to have to be very important.
I also will tell you that, and I do believe this. Now, we'll see moving forward what the role is in totality. But look, man, Ernie Sims being a part of this program again in any capacity is a good thing. Ernie was the highest rated recruit Florida State ever got in terms of overall rating and is extremely well thought of. And, you know, that might buoy their linebacker recruiting. I'm rooting for that to be the case. Had a chance to speak with Ernie a couple different times so far being out there, and he's obviously very excited to be back here. Very excited to learn, very excited to kind of do some things that, you know, he's always wanted to do for Florida State. So and he'll be excited to see you tomorrow, buddy. That'll be great.
I can't wait. I have not seen him since. He was actually a Warchant TV alum as well.
Mm-hmm.
We did some breakdowns.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things ever that we've done was his defensive breakdown talking about coverage rules and principles for linebackers. It was so fascinating to watch him work on the board because we had the touchscreen at that time.
Yeah.
But the people never came and picked
they
up.
They never picked it up. That's still the weirdest thing of all time.
They left like a $7,000 touchscreen.
Just left it there.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot all about that. Like, why did they leave this here? They were supposed to come pick it up. It was bizarre. But Ernie's got a smile, a perpetual smile on his face. He's always kind of been that way. He's always been kind of an affable guy. But you can just see it. He's really pumped now to be here and to see him on a day-to-day basis is awfully nice. And maybe he'll help out quite a bit with linebackers. Ira Shafel, warchant.com, my man, joins us as he's wont to do on Mondays. What's happening, partner?
I'm good, Jeff. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, brother. I gave some thoughts on what I'd seen out there these first few practices, and I know everybody's kind of weighed in, but I want you to weigh in for our listeners here. What stood out to you of what you can talk about, and what are you still interested to see now that the pads are on?
I mean, there's so much.
Yeah,
I mean,
there is.
Like, it's you know, it's kind of hard to figure out where to start, but you know, I think overall, the talent level, you know, I think what we expected coming into it is probably pretty much played out what we expected. I mean, there is a ton of talent, a lot of new faces that, you know, should be able to bring a lot of speed and different capabilities to this team. But you also are reminded, I think, every time we go out there that, you know, it is so many new pieces. And whether it's the new transfers that came in, the 14 new transfers that came in, or the 10 or 12 high school players that are there as early enrollees. And then even some of the backups in the past who are now kind of trying to step up into bigger roles. There's just so much to take in. I don't know if there's like one central theme, but I would say overall, like, I'm not less optimistic about their chances, but I also am not less concerned about the fact that you have so many new faces to plug in.
Do you get as giddy and childlike as I do when you watch Jalen Lucas play football? Because he's just fun. That guy is just flying around. Every time we go out there, it's a joy to watch him play.
Yeah, he's super talented. And I'm glad that Norvell is excited about him because, you know, when I asked Norvell about him last week, he said, you know, yeah, you know, he's a great kick returner and everybody knows that. And he made a comment about he's a guy you kind of need to have a plan for. In other words, the way I took that is, you know, he's not, you know, Trey Benson where you're
no.
all 3 or 25 times, but he has immense potential and breakaway speed. And he's not just a fast guy. Sometimes with track kind of speed, you don't know, do they have agility? Do they have the ability to change direction? Do they have vision? All those types of things. I think in small sample sizes, we've seen this kid has all that. He's a football player with really elite speed. So I'm excited that they're excited about him because I definitely think he can really help the offense.
I think he can too. And I've been pleasantly surprised watching him and the kind of the zeal with which he plays the game and blinding speed. And it is good that Mike addressed it because now we can talk about it, right? We're not giving away secrets. He's basically telling you and telling everybody else, yeah, we're impressed. We're impressed. We're going to figure out a way to use him, which I'm excited about. I read your piece with Daryl Jackson. For those that haven't had a chance to go and read it, It Feels Great is the headline. FSU defensive lineman Daryl Jackson brings new look, new energy into 2024. I'm glad you wrote it because I thought it looking at him, watching him at practice. He looks like he's in the best shape of his life. He looks like he's got a great mindset. He looks like he's a guy who's focused on, well, frankly, getting paid.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of, I think if you're a reader, that if you're the kind of like hardcore FSU fan that reads every practice report, watches every Mike Norvell video, listens to, you know, all the content you can get, then you might be thinking, well, we heard great things about him last year. And mm-hmm. that's true because he is, you know, just an incredibly gifted human being. And for a guy who kind of got screwed by the process and not able to play last year, he did have a good attitude in terms of, you know, he wasn't moping around. He wasn't sulking. But I think what we're seeing now is there's a difference between not being a problem and versus actually being like, okay, this is a motivated, really dedicated dude with incredible potential. And it's just, you look at him and you see some of the things he does. And it's not just the, you know, what he looks coming off the bus. I mean, he's making plays. I mean, I'm sure you talked about it as well. I mean, he is a disruptive force, and his body is just I mean, you and I were standing there looking at him one day just like, man, what planet is he from?
Yeah, we were having the conversation. I was right. We just looked at each other. He doesn't make any sense. And this is why we were pumped about him a year ago, is that you saw he was freakishly put together. I mean, look, there's no other way to say it. I mean, the guy's 6'5", 330. He's a monster of a human being, and he can move. We saw last year where he'd have moments, pockets of time where he was really motivated and they couldn't block him. But then obviously it would be hard to sustain that for anybody once you learn you're not going to be able to play. So even though, like you said, he practiced every day and he was there, but it's hard when you know you're not going to get in, you're not allowed to play. He looks now like a guy who understands he's going to play and he's going to be relied upon to be a dominant force.
Exactly. Now you look at that defensive tackle group, and if you've got him and if you've got Josh Farmer, who, you know, I think we all think is an all ACC caliber player.
Yes.
A future NFL player. Then you've got the Grady Kelly kid. You've got, you know, some other pieces there, defensive tackle that, you know, I think there's a, you know, Daniel Lyons.
Lyons has played well so far. Yeah. I'm excited about him too.
So that, you know, again, they've lost a lot from that defensive tackle group, but they don't appear to be in danger of being in a depth issue. The one thing I would say, I think it, to me, and we'll see what happens, the Tamuwa Durajaye, the West Virginia transfer, they've said he might play defensive end, might play defensive tackle. Based on what I've seen out of Lolohea and Marvin Jones Jr. Mm-hmm. and all those guys, man, I think Durajaye might help this team more inside a defensive tackle. We'll see. I'm sure they'll give him a chance to do both. My guess is the young man might want to play defensive end. But I think on this team, I think he would help out, really bolster that interior, where I feel pretty good about those top-end defensive ends.
Yeah, he's a monster too, by the way. You see the size there. He's like a guy that you think if he does play defensive end, he's just setting the edge. He's not getting after right. The passer. But, yeah, I think they slide him inside some too. There's no doubt about that. What would you do? Okay, here he is. Coach Ira is at the dais, and he's just been asked about the bullpen. And he's thinking how to answer this delicately. What in the world do you do coming off of that?
No, I think it would be – this would be an epic press conference. I'd be throwing my shoes at people, tearing off my clothes. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Woo! That is – I mean, it's kind of the worst dreams, you know, come true. I mean, I don't think – you know, Link was not necessarily bashful about saying that – you know, he was a little bit concerned about the arms out of the pen, and I think he was pleasantly surprised during those first month or so. You know, they did come through in some important situations, but again, like, that was the thing, and just talking to some friends about it and some colleagues about it, you know, you really don't know until you play a series like that. And you know, it's one thing to do it at home against, you know, Western Carolina or whoever. It's one thing to do it on the, even in a neutral site, but man, you go in an environment like that, in a situation like that, you really find out what guys are made of. And so now we'll see how they bounce back from it. I mean, I think there's still talent there. I think they've got guys to grow, and maybe they'll be better from having been in it. But I just think for a lot of those guys, it was the first time they had been in that situation, and it just crumbled and snowballed. So I didn't think this team was going to win it all this year necessarily. I wouldn't predict it. And I don't think now, after seeing that, oh, they're not going to be a tournament team or not hosting the tournament. I just think, you know, that's a great growing experience for some guys who probably have never experienced that before.
Well, you know, for starters, the one thing that gets overshadowed in all of this is that we do know now they have a top-tier offense.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, up and down this lineup, they bash. I mean, this is going to be a fun team to watch play the game of baseball because they do pick it up and they run the bases well. And their at-bats are fantastic. I mean, they do a very good job with that. So they're not the unwatchable bunch that was losing games a year ago. They've gotten immensely better from where they were. And their starting pitching is decent to good. They just don't – I mean, obviously right now the concern is this bullpen. It'll be interesting to see if you're right. It seems like it's going to go one of two ways, right? They're either wrecked from that and devoid of confidence, or it can't get any worse, boys.
We'll see. I think the way they came back, you know, the second game Saturday, and this wasn't necessarily the pitching staff, but just the team, after getting 10-run rule to come back and get a big lead in the second game, and then to go through that disastrous day.
And still have a big lead the next day, yeah.
Get a huge day, a bigger lead the next day. To me, that means I feel good about the mentality of the team and the mentality of how Link Jarrett, Mike Opposing, that staff deal with the players. So I think they're going to bounce through it, and then we'll just see if they're good enough to get other teams out, because they were not good enough on that weekend.
All right, brother, always a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, sir. See you, man.
Yep, take care. That's Ira Shaffel, warchant.com. He's good. On the spot right there, he's like, yeah, you know, throwing shoes. Actually, you have no choice but to be calm. You don't – it's not like you can – I got asked about it in the chat here a moment ago, the Heisen Lincoln Law Firm chat. What would I do? Listen, you have who you have. You know, that's kind of your problem here, is that you got to figure out how to make that work as best you can. They're not going to be elite out of the pen. Like, that's not going to be the strength of your team. But they're better than they showed this weekend, because the stuff is better there. I would also say they do have a potential shot in the arm. And I thought about it all weekend when I was watching the pen just fall to pieces. I kept thinking, where the hell is Ben Barrett? And he got a little dinged, I guess, up in Greenville when they were there for that tournament that they played in with the schools from the Midwest. And I the way I understand it, he wasn't hitting the gun where he was supposed to be, so they knew something was wrong. Like, there was a sore arm or something. You know, if you throw 90 and all of a sudden you're throwing 80 and you're throwing everything you got, they know, we got to shut it down. Let's take a look at what's going on here. But he's begun throwing again. Yeah. Is what I was told. So if he's back to throwing, he's got, you know, you got something you can do with him there to help you out in the bullpen. He'll come in and throw strikes.
Well, there was a time or two where Link brought his name up without a question, addressing where's Ben. So you could see why the importance level in his own mind, you know, that Ben's an important piece for us.
Oh, but he is indeed.
The thing I'd come back to here is, I think this is more about psychology than mechanics, experience than anything else for these younger pitchers. I mean, you know, Charles is still very young in his career. We know Rowan is a true freshman. You've got,
yeah, he got the outs in the eighth, and you're like, okay, there you go, Rowan. And then just, yeah.
Abraham also, you know, again, these guys have stuff for days. And some of the older guys are good matchup pieces if they don't have stuff. But generally speaking, you've got out pitches in that bullpen.
You do. They just got to be able to command him.
Correct. There's a problem. I'm not saying there's not a problem. It's just that I will come back to what you are working with here.
Yeah.
If you can cultivate two options, three options, that's okay. Now you're in a place where you're going to get these outs. And if you get it by nine, you can expect rightfully that you're going to win the baseball game.
The bomb that Abraham gave up, the pitch that he gave that bomb up, it's like, it's one of those pitches in the moment where you first guess. As soon as it comes out of his hand, I went, oh, no. Like, rapid fire in my head, because you don't have much time. He releases it, and you could just see from the release point what he was trying to do. He missed his spot. It's dead. It's dead center. Belt high against their best hitter. It's just hanging there. And I went, well, this is a problem.
So the first test, I mean, obviously you got a game in Jacksonville tomorrow night against a team that did some good things this weekend in Florida.
Going on the road to beat LSU is a big deal.
That, especially when you drop the first one, you fight back and they do what they did. So there is a test tomorrow that we'll see what the arms look like. But then for Cam on Friday, I mean, that's another thing. You know, he gets lost in the shuffle because of the bullpen issues.
He couldn't locate either, and he got frustrated, and he was mad about the strike zone, and it affected him.
Correct. He got squeezed a little bit here or there, but still, my man.
You got to let it go.
He didn't. And at 97, it seemed like that's the last pitch he wanted to use.
Well, he started dancing, and it drove me nuts, and I texted you that. I'm like, you throw 97.
Right.
Get in the zone. Get in the zone.
They're going to lace a couple.
They're
but
going to.
It's
they're
97.
Yeah.
Odds are we'll be okay.
Yeah, I think he'll grow up from that. Yeah, I think so. Frustrating. Very frustrating. But you know what's not frustrating? Zaxby's.
Oh, no.
Never frustrating.
Never.
Nope. Instead, it's delightful. Delicious. Can't wait. Platters at the Cameron household tonight, buddy.
Really?
Yeah, before the big show at 7 o'clock tonight.
Well, I know you're driving somebody somewhere, so maybe we can stop on the way.
If you'd like to get some delicious Zaxby's. We have 64 locations in Tallahassee.
I've yet to stop at one. This is my fault. This is a me issue.
Since you came back to town.
Yeah.
I mean, you've stopped at a Zaxby's millions
of
times.
Yes. No, but I've been here 36 hours and I failed. So yeah. I need to remedy that.
On our way home, I'll swing past one of the 64 Zaxby's. We will support Zaxby's just as Zaxby's supports us and Florida State Athletics for over 19 years now as a Golden Chief booster. My goodness gracious. We appreciate you, Zaxby's. It's Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Another week of very, very, very good weather means that you have an opportunity to take it outside and perhaps grill on your deck or whatever it is that you'd like to do. This is the time of year where it's a lot of fun to do. And so I would point you very quickly to my friends at Social Kitchen. They do a great job. You can check them out for yourselves, socialkitchentlh.com. I mentioned my experience in speaking to the chef and learning more about how to prepare food. Right now, the way it works, they've got a diverse range of discounts. They got promotions for customers to indulge in, and they have the delectable prepared meals. They've got discounted wines, and every day it's a different deal, including on the best steaks you'll find in town. Monday, today, $5 off any steak, $5 a pound. There you go, off any steak that you choose on a Monday. So that's really a good deal there. And then on Tuesday, they do the Tote Tuesdays. You bring in your bag, 15% discount on all chef-prepared food items. And that includes the banana pudding, which got me started on this whole thing. Delicious. Wine Wednesdays, specials throughout the week.
Never heard of that before.
Yeah, a little Wine Wednesdays action. They're on Cary Forest Parkway over there. If you know where the Ology is, then you know where they are. Swing on in there, and you'll be glad you did.
Our old switchboard operator did love him some Wine Wednesdays and Wine Mondays and Wine Tuesdays as well. Remember how many lines he would generate?
Yeah, I was just...
47 phone lines.
I forgot about how many times we would say that. Make sure, by the way, that when you go out to practice this week, Ira and I were just talking about it, you note Daryl Jackson's improved physique. Back to that for a second. He's got a chance to wreck some folks.
He looks at peace. That's the other thing, just watching the interview, because I consume it like the fan does, except for tomorrow, thankfully. And in a couple of weeks, I'll catch another practice. But just watching him, I've seen several of his interviews. They're typically good. He's engaging, but there's just a, he seems at peace. And I think that's one thing that this program does consistently well, is that it shows you that if you work your butt off, the feeling of preparation and capability that you'll have to get through a practice or to know where to be, like there's peace that comes with discipline. You often talk about this with kids. Mm. They want to have a schedule. They want to know where they
need to be. They want to be disciplined, yeah.
I just, this program harps on that in everything they do, from scheduling the day-to-day existence of the athlete with their classes and their tutoring and their sports psych and their training. Like, it just, you can see it when somebody's here for their second year. It clicks. They're here for their third year. They're at peace. Like, this thing works. This machine works. And I think that's why they're getting a ton of yeses out of both high school and the portal.
There's no doubt that what they've used and utilized as their messaging about how they wanted to build the program and the consistency with which they work themselves, meaning the coaches, and what they ask of players, has paid off, because now it runs smoothly. It's interesting to watch the guys that come around, the guys that kind of figure it out. There haven't been too many moments. Coaches have to walk a very fine line. When you have an elite-level player at a program that is not performing well and you need more of those kinds of players to come in, you run the risk of alienating that person if you are hard on them and they know they're the best player on the team. They know they're the most talented guy, and they know that you really can't afford to lose them. If you acquiesce to that, then your demands of players is, you know, deemed disingenuous and people will not follow you. If you stick to it, you could run them off and benefit long term for sticking to your guns. But it's tough because you may not last long enough to benefit from your consistency. And I thought Mike was playing that game. Like, we had to watch early on, would he stick by and stick to his guns? Would he continue to preach, We're built different, we're doing things the right way, there's a method to how we do this, it's never going to change, no matter the results of the games, it's always going to be this way, in the face of a make-or-break season like he did the year that they ended up going 10-3. He bet on himself, and it worked out. And the consistency now is paying off in the visits from five-star players, and also players like Darryl Jackson and Josh Farmer and others who you've had some tense moments with in the past and you worried about where their head was at. Those players have turned the corner. Those players have seen the results of that consistency.
Well, the other part of it too, you know, there's negative recruiting for a lot of reasons that you have to weather the storm. It's not just about going 0-4. It's about, how do I get kids to say yes when they think I'm on a hot seat, I'm about to get fired. So you've got to be consistent to the kid that you may never see if you don't make it that far. And then the negative recruiting is, well, they don't have a lot of natural ties to high school in the state of Florida. The negative recruiting is, oh, they'll go to the portal, but they won't develop anybody right out of high school. And as they're answering each one of these questions, and they're putting checks in the boxes of things that guys can no longer say against them, now perhaps the ACC exit being the last one that you're in a power conference, I mean, what do you got for me, says Mike. And I appreciate that he is steadfast in a lot of ways, because you're talking about it from a macro perspective. But then in a micro perspective, think about the substitutions that they did in games.
Mm-hmm.
Mass substitutions on defense in key drives, because he's playing the long game. He believes that it's going to pay off in game 12, game 13, and boy, was he right. The way that defensive line played against Florida and Louisville was not only because of the necessity of a backup quarterback, they were fresh because he knew about the rotation. But you're risking the now for the payoff later.
Well, he also knew they were good enough to win games as their offense struggled through an injury-riddled season. He knew that, okay, some of the offenses we're facing are not elite. I've got a chance to kind of just hang in there with this defense, play some field position, be smart, don't turn the football over, and, you know, win an ugly game. I'll take these ugly wins because I got some guys that are playing right now defensively who are banged up. But if they're right by the end of the year, we can dominate when we have to dominate, i.e. the ACC championship game against a very good offense. Louisville had a successful and consistently good offense this year. He knew, now he could not have predicted that they were going to really have to fall back on their defense because of the injuries to Jordan Travis and others, but he did know that, yeah, he was letting guys get right. And they did. They got right. Obviously, there may not be a better example of that than Braden Fisk.
But I love that because, you know, from the program building perspective and then the coaching in a season, two different things. One is micro to the other's macro.
Yeah.
He's willing to run the numbers, make a calculation, and then stick with the game plan. I mean, that's the thing. You're betting on yourself. That's a long process of betting on yourself. And you're saying, hey, these are the numbers. This is the plan. We're sticking to the plan. That's not easy to do.
Well, and there, you can talk about micro and macro here again within a game. You know, within a game, to have the patience to let it be zip-zip. And like, okay, we're going to be a conservative as hell and punt.
We're better conditioned. We'll win out.
We'll win out. And I mean, you're running the risk of getting down or something like that. Hey, good work. Good to have you back in studio. Appreciate you guys as always. We'll talk to you later. And don't forget tonight, 7 o'clock, War Chant TV. Be a part of that conversation with Florida State's Town Hall.